Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Today we're talking about cats and the importance of getting them spayed and neutered with our guest, Dr. Angie Rupo. Dr. Angie's been practicing since 2003. She founded Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic. Clinic provides low-cost spays, neuters, and vaccines in Northwest Wisconsin. Also has physical locations in Baldwin and in Eau Claire. So as we talk with Dr. Angie, I hope you'll join in. Tell us how your cat's doing. What are your questions about neutering or spaying your cat? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Dr. Angie, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are going to talk about neutering and spaying cats today. Just why is it important that cats be neutered and spayed?
Well, I guess the biggest reason is that I do it is because we see so many unwanted litters of kittens. When I was first in Cumberland at the Northern Lakes Veterinary Clinic, I would go out to the farms and there would just be so many cats and kittens running around, and they were often sick with conjunctivitis and other respiratory infections, and it broke my heart. And I really, by spaying and neutering, we can prevent those unwanted litters and really make cats healthier in the long run.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And you're the founder of Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic. Tell us a little of the history of that mobile clinic. What gave you the idea to get it started and going?
Yeah. So I worked in Cumberland at a private practice for about 14 years, and I had a couple of clients that, in particular, that often would ask us to make spay and neuter more affordable for the cats in our area. And it was really hard and difficult as a private practice to do that because we had our regular clients to fit in. And but it was always on the kind of on my mind. And then there was a horrible tornado in Chapek, and I think that was 2017. And one of those clients was rescuing cats that were living in a colony in Chapek, and they no longer had a home because of the tornado. And so I talked to her, and she talked to me, and it was decided that I would help spay and neuter those cats during my lunch hours. And I had a great boss, Dr. Eric Stone, and he was fine with me doing that. And so I worked with Wendy, and we spayed and neutered a bunch of cats from Chitek over my lunch hours, and then she was able to get them adopted. And I found that really fulfilling. It surprised me how much I enjoyed that and how it fulfilled what I thought of my career. And so after that, I decided that I wanted to do more. And so that's really where Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic got started. I reached out to some of the shelters and humane societies in Northern Wisconsin. And it took a little bit of time. I had a day or two off. And so I would spend my days off traveling to shelters in Ashland and Superior, Lady Smith, Mondovi for a little bit. And I would spay and neuter cats at the shelters, and then they would bring in the public cats to also get spayed and neutered.
Well, it's an amazing story, Dr. Angie. What is your mobile surgery unit look like?
So when I first started, this wasn't something I was really wanting to take out big loans to do. And I'm a do-it-yourselfer, my husband's a do-it-yourselfer. And so, my goal was to do farm cats. And so I really didn't care too much about what it looked like. So I actually used an old trailer that was used as an ice shack. And I I just gutted it as if it was a room in an old house. So I just gutted it, and I put a window in it. I'd need my windows, and I put surfaces that could easily be cleaned. And I, my husband helped me wire it, and it got a heater in it and some nice stainless steel counters. And so that's what I used for the first couple of years. And I truly was a mobile clinic at that time. I went to farms in that, and it was really great. It got me started. But then what happened is after COVID happened, my services were just, I was so busy. I was doing it out of my driveway in that trailer, and so many people were coming that needed surgery. They were driving over 2 hours from Minnesota, northern Wisconsin. And so that's when I used the trailer a lot, but when I got so busy during COVID is when I got my permanent locations, and that way I could see a few more cats every day, having the permanent locations in Eau Claire and Baldwin.
A marvelous story. Mary in Independence will give you a chance. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I just have to give a shout out to Dr. Angie. She and her crew were wonderful in helping me with an overabundant cat population on my farm. And I had a variety of cats, some a little bit tame, some very, very, very feral. They didn't turn any of them away. They were just, I can't say enough about it. So affordable for me. Changed our farm cat life. Thank you, Dr. Angie. Thank you so much.
Oh, Mary, that warms my heart. Thank you for calling.
Oh, yeah, Mary, thank you so much for calling in with that. And those kinds of calls or those kinds of notes you might get from people are just in person have to mean a lot, Dr.
Absolutely.
Angie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. We have other callers online with questions and comments, and let's take a call. Let's go to Julie in Winona, Minnesota next. Hi, Julie.
Hi. My 16-year-old male cat has just recently been diagnosed with kidney disease, and all our veterinarian did was put in prescription diet and say that we should make sure that he drinks lots of water and watches urine production.
Julie, you're really breaking up. I'm sorry. Julie's cat was diagnosed with kidney disease, and the prescription was to put it on a kidney disease diet, basically. And Julia's wondering, is there any other way to manage something like that?
So kidney disease is horrible. It's common. Up to 25% of senior cats develop kidney disease when they are older. I'm sorry. I've seen it a lot, and it's always sad. The change in diet is the first thing we do. It slows the progression. So kidney disease, you can never stop the progression. You can't reverse it. You can only slow the progression. And so the low proteins and the other ingredients in the kidney diet will help slow the progression of kidney disease. Once the kidney disease is advanced enough, you'll find that he gets dehydrated easily because the kidneys can't concentrate the urine as before. And so at that point, we will start to sometimes add supplemental fluids in the way of subcutaneous injections. And some veterinary clinics will do that, have you come in for that once or twice a week. Other veterinary clinics are willing to teach you to do that at home on your own. Hmm. But the fluid and the diet are the two main things. But there are some other supplements out there that can be helpful. It kind of depends on the current research and what the current research recommends.
Yeah. Julia, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. How do you make these surgeries affordable, Dr. Angie?
Yeah.
I mean, you're kind of, in a way, you're taking money out of your own pocket and giving it to somebody else, sort of, in a way, or letting them keep it.
Yeah. So it's all about efficiency. I started out, when I first started doing this, I scheduled myself for 20 cats a day, and that was a full day of surgeries. And I never played a musical instrument, and so I didn't really understand muscle memory. And now I definitely understand muscle memory. It was probably 3 years into it that I realized how fast I was getting. My hands just automatically do the surgeries. And so so that's how I do them so fast myself. But then I have terrific staff. I have 2 certified veterinary technicians that work with me. I have 2 veterinary assistants that work with me. They are all great, all efficient. They're super hard workers. They're easy to work with. And so it's a combination of just my skills and muscle memory along with great staff.
And these would you call them MASH clinics? You set
yeah.
up? Yeah. What is the MASH clinic? what is a MASH clinic?
So that's a hybrid. It's where I would take all of my supplies to a location and set up in a big room. And so that's what I started doing up when I was transitioning from using the trailer to my permanent locations. I would take everything with me and set up in a room at the Ashland Humane Society, for example, and then I would unload and take it back home with me every day.
Wow. I got to believe that this had an impact on rural cat populations during this time.
You know, you'd think it would. I've every 6 months to a year, we always see the numbers that we've done. And so we're currently at over 40,000 cats in 6 years. And I don't know how that's possible, but it is. And
wow.
I keep thinking that eventually we're going to run out of cats, and then maybe I can open my services to do dogs. I get questions all the time, when are you going to do dogs? And my answer is, well, when we stop having so many cats to do. And I have found that I'm just as busy. I think that we're hitting new populations. I don't think that it's not us not making an impact. I think that we are expanding our services to people that haven't heard about us yet. We have trappers and folks that work in rescue and TNR, trap, neuter, release, who will work on colonies of cats and bring them to me. And they do a really nice job with follow-up at these colonies to make sure that they stay under control and that any new cats in the population are spayed and neutered. So as far as the population as a whole in Wisconsin, as a whole, we must be making an impact. But there's so many cats out there. You just have one farm that might have 100 cats on it.
But I really
try to focus on... So when I do think, wow, how are we still seeing all these cats? I try to focus on the individual colonies and farms that no longer have the problem, just like Mary, the first caller, where, you know, we fixed it. And so now they can keep, now they have a healthy colony of cats that whose population is kept under control.
And the permanent locations you have 2, and one in Baldwin, one in Eau Claire. So you must be going through a lot of surgeries, and I assume you're offering other kinds of service through those permanent locations.
Because we are really focused on efficiency, if we're not efficient, we can't do the numbers that we are doing. And so we really focus on cats spaying and neutering. And then we started this year, we have distemper and rabies for cats. Walk-in clinics. So we do that once or twice a week.
Yeah.
So, but those are really the only services we do.
Dave and Toma has a question about relating to feral cats, I believe. Dave, hello.
Yeah, hi. You know, you had a guest on from the DNR a few weeks ago about the bird population, and I want to know what you're doing with these feral cats after you fix them.
Well, they typically go back to their farm, and they're no longer reproducing, and so you'll find that the population gets more stable. It goes down in time as just because of age, they are no longer there. Sometimes diseases still can reduce those numbers.
And Steve in Fitchburg has a question for you as well. Steve, hello.
Hello, thanks. So I live in a 60s subdivision of a city south of Madison, and there's a neighbor who I have not met who has structures outside of their house that I understand has she houses this house houses shelters feral cats. If I'm going to invest in feeding birds because I like birds, I see conflict, and I'd like to know more about it. It's a segue from Dave's question.
And I'm not go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Angie.
So the question is, how do the cats impact the bird population?
Yeah, that might be the question. Or the question is, how do you approach if the person has those cats that are, if they're feral, are they neutered or not?
Yeah. So, you know, as far as, I don't know what the city statutes state as far as housing cats and feeding cats. You know, I deal with the people and trying to get their populations of cats spayed and neutered. I think that as far as the birds in your area, if they are well fed, they're not going to be going after the birds as much as you'd think. And so I don't know that those necessarily are always intertwined.
Our guest today, Dr. Angie Ruppel, a veterinarian and founder of the Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to WPR News. Zeroing in today a bit on spaying and neutering cats with our guest, Dr. Angie Ruppel, a veterinarian founder of the Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic. Great to have her with us, and I hope you join in. Maybe we got an email. You can email us to talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And oh, I just wanted to mention, we're getting into the holiday season. I wanted to let you know that Santa Claus will be stopping by this studio this year. We'll have him on the show on Christmas Eve, and he'll be ready to take calls from our young listeners to talk with them about their Christmas wishes. So that's on Christmas Eve. In the meantime, we have Vivian in Green Bay with a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. I have a friend of several decades, rural. She has cats, and then recently one of her three cats got out, and she was concerned that it would come back pregnant. So I said, well, why isn't she stayed? And finances are part of the problem, but not all of it, because I've offered to do this. And I've helped her out in the past in other ways. So, you know, I could help with that. I've got five animals of my own. But she says that the surgery is too hard on these cats. She doesn't want to do it. Five kittens last time had to go to the shelter. I bring that up. What are the other benefits of doing the spaying besides keeping them in and not adding to the population?
Well, so,
go ahead, Dr. Angie.
So I'm wondering if she maybe had a bad situation happen, and that makes her a little bit nervous to spay and neuter a cat now. There's always risks. Surgery is not without risks, but those risks are very low, especially if you are doing the surgery on a cat that's still, you know, usually I say less than 7 years old. After seven, they're considered more of a senior cat. So benefits, so of course they won't have litters of cats. You are removing the ovaries and the uterus, and so they don't get ovarian cancer. They don't get infections in their uterus. They don't roam as much. They stick around. Those are the biggest. The biggest things, mammary cancer, breast cancer, we don't see that very often in the spayed female cats.
All good points, Vivian. I hope you're able to use them on your neighbor and friend. Dorothy in Williams Bay, your turn. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. Hi, Larry. So first I wanted to just make a comment that how hard it is that some people think that it's okay to just drop off a cat that they don't want at a farm or in a forest preserve, and how, and I'm not quite sure how to get that across to people to understand that that's not okay. You need to be responsible for your pets. Okay, so here's my situation. I have 9 feral cats that are all neutered, and I'm feeding them. And I don't see very much of them going after birds. I don't feed the birds in the summer because the cats can hide in the bushes and stuff. But in the winter, I feed them, and the cats don't have a very good chance of getting them because everything's covered with snow. Anyway, so there's my 9 cats. And with the doctor there, I know you're going out and you're fixing cats at farms and stuff, but then my problem is, how do I give these animals flea and tick medicine and tapeworms especially, because I can't take my feral cats into the vet and get a prescription for something that really works, like Bravecto really works, but they require that the vet give it to me. So does she have a recommendation for how I can get this medicine to protect my cats from fleas and ticks and worms?
Dr. Angie?
So veterinarians need to have a relationship with the clients before they can prescribe medication. And so typically we call it a veterinary client-patient relationship, which means your veterinarian knows you and they know your animals. And otherwise their license can be called into question if they are prescribing medication without knowing their clients. So that's pretty standard that would be a requirement. I totally get it. This is something that comes up all the time as far as how to get flea and tick medication for these cats. Some veterinarians, if you have a good relationship with your veterinarian, some of them may give you prescriptions based on the fact that they know you and they've maybe met 1 or 2 of your cats. They do not necessarily have to meet all of the cats. So that's where I would start, is seeing if they were willing to give you a prescription after doing an exam on one of the cats. And even if they're feral, you can take the cat into the vet clinic in a live trap, and then they can do some sort of a visual exam just to put it in the records that they did do an exam.
Dorothy, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Julie in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Julie.
Hello. Thank you for being there. So, you guys, I have a 3-year-old male neutered cat that we found was living in one of our sheds. I've gotten him fixed. The last month, he's been dropping weight. I took him to the vet. We had a blood test. It came back fine. She said there was a little bit of a calcium level, you know, that would be, you know, that I should look at. The other part is he's home and we're going on 2 weeks now and he's still not gaining weight or eating. I mean, he's drinking a little bit. He tastes a little bit. He's eliminating. But so today I started injecting no salt chicken broth in him. And then a little bit of the gravy from some of the cat food, because I'm just concerned that he's going to waste away. And maybe it's some mental thing of him being in there with the cats, that he's being bullied. I don't know what's going on, but I got him checked. So my main question is, what would be the best supplemental thing to give him to help him survive, if possible?
Good supplement.
Yeah, so he's 3 years old, and he has been neutered. Do you know what test they did when you took him to your veterinarian?
I don't. I'm sorry, I don't. They said I could pay for more and have further tests done. you know, in regards to the kidneys. But we've got two dogs, probably one cat on purpose here, and now we have 9 cats and 5 dogs after 18 years. So, you know.
Oh, wow.
It's fine. We love them. And we've probably found at least 30 animals homes just in the 18 years. But, you know, you end up with some of them regardless.
Yeah. So, you know, there's definitely going to be a reason that he's losing weight. It's not going to be that he's upset about a housemate. At least it's sounding like he has significant weight loss. And so I like that you're syringe feeding him some low-salt chicken broth and gravies. That's a great thing to do. Does he vomit after you do that?
I have not found vomit yet.
Good.
No. I want to know, how many times do you think I should keep injecting him? Because up till now, you know, I wasn't. But I'm like, that there's no way that he needs help.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much to feed him because I haven't seen him in person. I haven't seen his blood test. I don't know what the underlying cause is. I think to really know what to do, he needs more tests and probably more blood tests. And sometimes x-rays and imaging is needed. And I know that's costly. I get it. I mean, that's a huge reason that I'm still doing what I'm doing is because there isn't affordable options for spaying and neutering. And I also know how much it costs to go in and get those blood tests. So my heart goes out to you if this is a cost issue. There's not a whole lot that I can recommend for that reason, but keep doing the syringe feeding. As far as calories, you can, I guess it depends on how much he's eating on his own. I really can't comment too much more on that because I have
them. Yeah. We have Beth in the Madison area with a question as well. Beth, hello.
Hi, this is Beth.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Hello, hear me? This is Beth.
I think we're having a problem there with Beth, so we're going to move on and turn to another question, and that this has to do with the actual process of doing the spaying or the neutering. Is it difficult to? I mean, cats can be nervous. My cat, I have 2 cats, and they're both nervous when they go to the vet anyway. But cats and their owners both get a little nervous before a surgery. How do you help your cat relax before a visit to you or another veterinarian?
That's a really good question. One thing to do starting out when they're kittens is to get them used to the kennel. A lot of cats will just run and hide as soon as that kennel comes out. And so as kittens, if you can make the kennel part of the furniture, so that they are used to that. You can put a bed in there. You can feed them in the kennel. You want them to like that kennel. And so that's number one. Now, if you haven't started that as a kitten, you can start that anytime. You don't want the first day you introduce the kennel to be the day they're going to the veterinarian, because then you'll never get them to go to the veterinarian. So start with the kennel. And so if you haven't done that as a kitten, you can start when they're adult. As soon as you make that appointment, just start getting that kennel out there and see if you can get them to eat inside of it. And then the day of surgery or the night before, you can put the food in there. They go in there and eat, and then you can close the door on them. And then there is medication. Gabapentin is one that is commonly used. It's an anti-anxiety calming medicine, and that can be given to cats the night before and again the morning of. And that's a nice calming medication that will make the visit much more enjoyable for them.
First, you have to get the cat to eat it.
Yeah, so we have we'll give it to our clients that we have already met. So again, that's client veterinary patient relationship. So if we have a client that we've been working with and we know their animals the way we send it home is with a little canned cat food sample. And then it's a capsule that they can open, mix it in with the canned food, and the cats eat it really well.
What happens during the surgery itself? And, you know, how quick is this operation, this spaying or neutering?
So it will depend on the veterinarian and their skills and their experience. When I was first doing surgeries just out of vet school, my spay, kind of embarrassed to say, was about 20 minutes long. And but that's probably close to typical for a lot of veterinarians. Now, same exact surgery, but my incisions are smaller, and so that makes it go quicker, and my hands are faster. Now the surgeries are somewhere between 5 and 7 minutes. And then as far as a neuter goes, those probably are, I'd say 3 or 4 minutes in length. Probably a lot less. It just kind of depends on the prep.
Yeah, and then what kind of stitches, you know, do you put in the cats?
The boy cats don't get any stitches. Their skin just kind of sticks to itself and easy that way. The girls, they have a suture on the body wall and then one just below the skin, and then there's a little glue on top of the skin.
Okay, so, and then... recovery afterwards, I'm wondering what kind of post-surgery care do any of the cats require?
Usually not very much. Clients always ask about putting an e-collar on their cat or a surgical bodysuit, and it's pretty uncommon for the cats to be licking after surgery, and so we don't worry about licking, but it can happen. It's just not very common. We don't want them to run around. We don't want them climbing the curtains and jumping off, because that can disturb the sutures, cause more pain mostly, but potentially bleeding. So we do want them to be quiet for about a week. Having said that, you know, with all the cats I've done that live on farms and go back out the very next day and live their regular life, it's pretty rare to have a complication from too much activity afterwards. They limit themselves.
Beth in the Madison area has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Yes, I appreciate you taking my call. My question is actually for my daughter's cat, and I just heard from her today, actually, that she and her husband are very disappointed. They feel as though they're going to have to rehome the cat that they've had for 4 years. It is their second cat. They have a first cat, and they brought a second cat in as a companion. The cats get along great, but their second cat, Mo, has apparently been peeing around the house and has done this continually for about 4 years. They've taken the cat to the vet. This cat is neutered, as is their first cat, and the vet says it's behavioral, not anything health-wise, and I'm wondering if you have any recommendations of anti-anxiety medicine or any behavioral suggestions so that might help them to not have to rehome this cat.
So the cat doesn't use the litter box?
No. He pees in the basement and on the floors, and when they're home or when they're gone, he doesn't seem to want to use a litter box. And it's been in through two different apartments and the home they now live in. It has been since the beginning. They got him from a shelter, and they're not sure if he did that in his previous home. They really don't know.
Yeah, that's frustrating. A lot of owners have had cats that urinate inappropriately. I'm glad they took him to the veterinarian. The veterinarian always wants to make sure that it's not a bladder infection, that it's not bladder stones. Both of those can cause pain. When there's pain, the cat's going to want to urinate outside the litter box because they're trying to tell you that something's wrong. Sometimes stress can cause it as well, but that's, again, something that the veterinarian probably would have picked up on. A lot of times with stress, the cats will have inflammation in the bladder, and that will cause blood in the urine. And so the veterinarian should have picked up on that. So if they've ruled out all the Medicare, the the medical reasons, then we do look at behavioral. And there's a lot with behavioral, and this is probably something that their veterinarian already talked to them about. There's handouts that we often give folks. But it starts with making sure there's enough litter boxes. If they have two cats, they need at least three litter boxes. Sometimes we have you try different litters. You can do the non-clumping litter. Sometimes the cats just like the good old-fashioned litter. So you want to make sure that it's not a problem with the litter. Is it scented litter? Sometimes you have to give them a buffet of litters just to see if there's one in particular that they like. So that's one way, one place to take this conversation. There's Feel Away is a common product. It has pheromones, just a good smelling pheromones that cats get from their mother when they're nursing. And so that can be very calming for cats and help them not help them if there is a stress causing this. And then finally, there is medication, and this is often a place that clients don't want to go, but there are medications that can be helpful in these situations.
Yeah. Would calming medications, or what kind of medications?
Yeah, they're more like antidepressant-type medications.
Oh.
Yeah. And so actually some of them are human drugs that we can give to cats.
Beth, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. Angie Ropel, our guest today, veterinarian, founder of the Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic. She does lots and lots and lots of spaying and neutering of cats. It's great to have her with us, and you can join into it. 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Our guest today, Dr. Angie Ropel, it's great to have her with us as we talk spaying and neutering with your cats. And here's a question. You may have addressed this a little earlier, but how does your cat need to be, how old does your cat need to be to be spayed or neutered, and then on the other end, how, you know, when is it too old?
Yeah, I did not cover that yet, so I'm glad you asked. So for the typical pet cat, we want them to have had all their kitten shots, and we want their immune system to be pretty mature. And so we do recommend 6 months of age for the pet cats. It will just make the surgery have just be the least chance of complications. I work with a lot of shelters and humane societies, and for those folks, their goal is to get these kittens spayed and neutered and then adopted out. And so for those folks, we will do it as young as 8 to 10 weeks of age, as long as they have had at least two vaccinations.
And on the other,
And then as far as if it's too old, we, in general, we want to do it at our clinic. We want them to be less than 7 years of age. Once they're 7 years, they're considered seniors, and you can have a higher risk of complications. However, that doesn't mean they shouldn't be spayed and neutered. We still absolutely want them spayed and neutered. If you found a cat and it's 10 years old and it's not, and he's not neutered, we still want you to have him neutered or spayed if it's a female. But then we would want you to take them to your full service veterinary clinic where they do the pre-surgical blood work. They have more in-depth monitors to make it a safer surgery.
Yeah. And what if you think your cat's pregnant? Can she still be spayed?
Yes, she can. It kind of depends on you and your own, what you want to do. Some clients do not want to spay a pregnant cat. They want them to have the kittens. Other clients will have them spayed. For us at Purple Cat, if they come to us pregnant, we will spay them. We don't check for pregnancy prior. It does make the surgery a little bit, have a slightly higher risk of complications. So we go through that briefly with the owners so that they understand those risks. But yes, we will definitely still spay them if they are pregnant.
And I've heard some people say that obesity can be a problem after a spay or neuter. How accurate is that, and how do we prevent it if it is?
Definitely cats, and really dogs too, their hormones change after you remove the ovaries. And so they are prone to obesity and gaining weight. The hormones change so that they not only do their metabolism slow, but they actually feel more hungry. So it's an awful cycle. And so the only thing we can say is just feed them less. You can't free feed them. You have to meal feed them and watch their intake and watch their weight. And if they are gaining weight, you just have to reduce their food.
And if you've got, you deal with this all the time, if you have a lot of outdoor cats at your farm, how do you round them up so a vet can come and fix them?
Yeah, so that can be tricky. Most of our, we've got the farm clients that have friendly cats, and so for them, they will borrow kennels often from their county humane society or shelter. And so the friendly cats, they'll just, maybe at feeding time, maybe the cats are used to being fed once or twice a day. At feeding time, the friendly cats, they'll just grab and put them in carriers. If they're feral cats, then they will hopefully be able to borrow live traps from an area shelter or humane society, or sometimes there's other folks in the area that have live traps, and then they will live trap them a few days before the clinics.
Wow. And how often do cats need general checkups?
When they're kittens, they should go to the veterinary clinic, usually monthly. They're going to be weighed, make sure they're growing appropriately. The veterinarian does a lot of educating as far as maintenance with deworming and flea and tick preventative. Vaccines are the probably the most important part of these kitten exams. We want, just like human babies need their vaccines and boosters, so do cats and dogs. And so those initial kitten visits are for health checks and then those vaccines. Usually we end the vaccine series once they are 16 weeks. Some sources say 20 weeks. At Purple Cat, we recommend 20 weeks to stop the vaccine series. And then we do another booster at a year. And then, and this is specific for the vaccines. So we do a booster at a year and then every 3 years on the distemper. So after those kitten vaccines and they're done with that series, then we still want to see the cats usually every year just to check their weight, check their health status, look at their teeth, make sure that there aren't problems that the owners are missing. And then once they hit 7 or 8 years of age and they're in that senior age range, then we recommend seeing them sometimes twice a year because they are aging faster and disease can creep up on them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, the vaccinations, which ones do they absolutely need?
So the core vaccines are the ones that we recommend for every single cat, no matter if they're only an indoor cat or if they go outside. And so those core vaccines are the rabies vaccine and the distemper. And we call it distemper, but it's your typical 3-in-1. It's the Khaleesi virus, the herpes virus, and the panleukopenia. Those are the core vaccines. And then depending on the cat's lifestyle, if they are in contact with other cats, then we usually want them vaccinated for feline leukemia.
Okay. And here's a question from how do you prevent your cat from getting fleas?
Fall is when we see fleas. Fall is a horrible time. So the only way to prevent it is by putting those topicals on the cats and doing it on a regular basis. So even indoor cats can get fleas. It's so frustrating, but those eggs can come in on your feet. So let's say you have rabbits that are running around outside. Eggs can fall off. You can bring them in on your shoes. And so even indoor cats that have never been outside should be on a flea preventative. I've personally seen those indoor-only cats get fleas. And there's many, many products. They are I believe they're all prescription products, and so you'll have to go to your regular full-service veterinarian to get those.
Yeah. And can you still bring your cat into the vet if they have fleas?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's just part of life. Cats have fleas, and so they will often recommend treatment of those fleas, and then they will treat the clinic will get treated so that they don't survive and then go on to other patients that come in later.
Sandy emailed us, could you discuss cats and blood pressure? She's currently dealing with this with a very scared rescue kitty. She knows when they take her into the back of the clinic to check her blood sugar, it probably makes her very stressed. And best practices for getting a cat's blood pressure.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely, cats do get stressed. And generally, we'll take three readings and take the average of the three readings, going in there more often for the blood pressure so that they're more used to it can be helpful. If you give calming medication, that might cause inaccuracy in the reading. And so blood pressure is definitely tricky. I would say know the veterinarian and the technicians. There's probably staff that are better at calming the cats and taking the blood pressures versus somebody that's new and fumbling and not sure what they're doing. So yeah. I would talk to the particular staff at your clinic and see what they can do that's particular to your cat to make it a better experience.
You know, when I go to see the doctor, they take my blood pressure right away, and it's always a little high, and then they have to take it a second time, and then they say, oh, your blood pressure is actually normal.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you have any here's one more email. Any recommendations? Let me give you this. Is there any reason the spay-neuter surgery couldn't be done by a licensed vet tech? Would that enable more access to clients seeking the service?
So I think that in some states they are trying to pass that certified veterinary technicians can do the neuter surgery. But definitely I don't think it's possible for them to do the spay surgery anywhere. A lot of the roadblocks have to do with the anesthesia, and only a veterinarian holding a DEA license can have the anesthesia. And so that's probably is going to be the big thing that prevents it. Even with neuters, I've found that it's such a quick surgery. I don't know that it would make it any better, even if the certified technicians could do that one.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Dr. Angie. I want to thank you for the work you do. You're providing a valuable service in northern Wisconsin, and it's much appreciated, I know, by the clients you have. And appreciate having you with us, and I hope we can talk again down the road. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Dr. Angie Ropel, veterinarian and founder of the Purple Cat Mobile Veterinary Clinic, and she has a couple she does MASH clinics, and she also has permanent locations in Baldwin and Eau Claire. Great to have her with us. And great to have you listening in today. Our show is always a team effort. Our producers, Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. Tomorrow on the show, are you wondering what happens to the stuff you throw out? We talk with about landfill microbiology, and you'll hear from the author of the book as well, titled A Natural History of Empty Lots. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.